Copyright 1992 Acebo. All material on this tape is copyrighted. It is a violation of federal copyright law to copy all or any part of this tape without the express written permission of Acebo. Post Office Box 7485, Spreckels, California, 93962. Tape 6, Side A. Simultaneous Lessons 19 and 20. Lesson 19.
Directions, paraphrase. Delitos sexuales, Código Penal de México. Artículo 260. Al que sin el consentimiento de una persona y sin el propósito de llegar a la cópula, ejecute en ella un acto sexual con intención lasciva o la obligue a ejecutarlo, se le impondrá prisión de 15 días a un año o de 10 a 40 días de trabajo en favor de la comunidad. Si se hiciere uso de la violencia física o moral, la pena será de 1 a 4 años de prisión. Artículo 261. Al que sin el propósito de llegar a la cópula ejecute un acto sexual en persona menor de 12 años de edad o en persona que por cualquier causa no pueda resistirlo o la obligue a ejecutarlo, se le impondrá de 6 meses a 2 años de prisión o de 20 a 80 días de trabajo en favor de la comunidad. Si se hiciere uso de la violencia física o moral, la pena será de 2 a 7 años de prisión. Artículo 265. Al que por medio de la violencia física o moral realice cópula con persona de cualquier sexo, se le impondrá prisión de 8 a 14 años.
Directions. Interpret into Spanish. Rape of non-spouse. Defendant is accused in count 6 of the information of having committed the crime of rape, a violation of section 261 of the Penal Code. Every person who engages in an act of sexual intercourse with a female person who is not the spouse of the perpetrator, accomplished against such person's will by means of force, violence, or fear of immediate and unlawful bodily injury, is guilty of the crime of rape in violation of Penal Code Section 261. In order to prove such crime, each of the following elements must be proved. 1. A male and female person engaged in an act of sexual intercourse. 2. The two persons were not married to each other. 3. The act of intercourse was against the will of the female person. And 4. Such act was accomplished by means of force, violence, or fear of immediate and unlawful bodily injury. Any sexual penetration, however slight, constitutes engaging in an act of sexual intercourse. Proof of ejaculation is not required. Against such person's will, means without the consent of the female person. Rape of spouse. Defendant is accused in count 7 of the information of having committed the crime of spousal rape, a violation of section 262 of the Penal Code. Every person who engages in an act of sexual intercourse with his wife, accomplished against her will by means of force or fear of immediate and unlawful bodily injury to her or another person, is guilty of the crime of spousal rape in violation of Penal Code Section 262. Lewd act with a child. Defendant is accused in count 8 of the information of having committed the crime of lewd act with child, a violation of Section 288A of the Penal Code. Every person who willfully and lewdly commits any lewd or lascivious act upon or with the body or any part or member thereof of a child under the age of 14 years with the specific intent of arousing, appealing to, or gratifying the lust or passions or sexual desires of such person or of such child is guilty of the crime of committing a lewd or lascivious act upon the body of a child in violation of Section 288A of the Penal Code. A lewd or lascivious act is defined as any touching of the body of a person under the age of 14 years with the specific intent to arouse, appeal to, or gratify the sexual desires of either party. To constitute a lewd or lascivious act, it is not necessary that the bare skin be touched. The touching may be done through the clothing of the child. The law does not require, as an essential element of the crime, that the lust, passions, or sexual desires of either of such persons be actually aroused, appealed to, or gratified. It is no defense to this charge that a child under the age of 14 years may have consented to the alleged lewd or lascivious act. In order to prove the crime, each of the following elements must be proved. 1. A person committed a lewd or lascivious act upon the body of a child. 2. The child was under 14 years of age. And 3. Such act was committed with the specific intent to arouse, appeal to, or gratify the lust, passions, or sexual desires of such person or of the child.
Lesson 20.
Directions. Paraphrase. Homicidio, Código Penal de Ecuador. Artículo 449. El homicidio cometido con intención de dar la muerte, pero sin ninguna de las circunstancias detalladas en el artículo siguiente, es homicidio simple y será reprimido con reclusión mayor de 8 a 12 años. Artículo 450. Es asesinato y será reprimido con reclusión mayor extraordinaria de 12 a 16 años el homicidio que se cometa con alguna de las circunstancias siguientes. Número 1. Con alevosía. Número 2. Por precio o promesa remuneratoria. Número 3. Por medio de inundación, veneno, incendio o descarrilamiento. Número 4. Con ensañamiento, aumentando deliberadamente e inhumanamente el dolor del ofendido. Número 5. Cuando se ha imposibilitado a la víctima para defenderse. Número 6. Por un medio cualquiera capaz de causar grandes estragos. Número 7. Buscando de propósito la noche o el despoblado para cometer el homicidio. Número 8. Con el fin de que no se descubra o no se detenga al delincuente, excepto cuando el homicida sea ascendiente o descendiente, cónyuge o hermano del delincuente al que se haya pretendido favorecer. Y número 9. Como medio de preparar, facilitar, consumar u ocultar otro delito, o para asegurar sus resultados o impunidad, o por no haber obtenido los resultados que se propuso al intentar el otro hecho punible. Definición de premeditación y alevosía. Código Penal de México. Hay premeditación siempre que el reo cause intencionalmente una lesión después de haber reflexionado sobre el delito que va a cometer. Se presumirá que existe premeditación cuando las lesiones o el homicidio se cometan por inundación, incendio, minas, bombas o explosivos, por medio de venenos o cualquiera otra sustancia nociva a la salud, contagio venéreo, asfixia o enervantes, o por retribución dada o prometida, por tormento, motivos depravados o brutal ferocidad. La alevosía consiste en sorprender intencionalmente a alguien de improviso o empleando acechanza u otro medio que no le dé lugar a defenderse ni evitar el mal que se le quiera hacer.
Directions. Interpret into Spanish. Homicide is the killing of one human being by another, either lawfully or unlawfully. Homicide includes murder and manslaughter, which are unlawful, and the acts of excusable and justifiable homicides, which are lawful. Every person who unlawfully kills a human being with malice aforethought, or during the commission or attempted commission of a felony inherently dangerous to human life, is guilty of the crime of murder in violation of Section 187 of the Penal Code. In order to prove such crime, each of the following elements must be proved. 1. A human being was killed. 2. The killing was unlawful. And 3. The killing was done with malice aforethought or occurred during the commission or attempted commission of a felony inherently dangerous to human life. Malice may be either express or implied. Malice is expressed when there is manifested an intention unlawfully to kill a human being. Malice is implied when, 1. The killing resulted from an intentional act, 2. The natural consequences of the act are dangerous to human life, and 3. The act was deliberately performed with knowledge of the danger to and with conscious disregard for human life. When it is shown that a killing resulted from the intentional doing of an act with express or implied malice, no other mental state need be shown to establish the mental state of malice aforethought. The mental state constituting malice aforethought does not necessarily require any ill will or hatred of the person killed. The word aforethought does not imply deliberation or the lapse of considerable time. It only means that the required mental state must precede rather than follow the act. All murder which is perpetrated by any kind of willful, deliberate, and premeditated killing with express malice aforethought is murder of the first degree. The word willful, as used in this instruction, means intentional. The word deliberate means formed or arrived at or determined upon as a result of careful thought and weighing of considerations for and against the proposed course of action. The word premeditated means considered beforehand. If you find that the killing was preceded and accompanied by a clear, deliberate intent on the part of the defendant to kill, which was the result of deliberation and premeditation, so that it must have been formed upon pre-existing reflection and not under a sudden heat of passion or other condition precluding the idea of deliberation, it is murder of the first degree. The law does not undertake to measure in units of time the length of the period during which the thought must be pondered before it can ripen into an intent to kill, which is truly deliberate and premeditated. The time will vary with different individuals and under varying circumstances. The true test is not the duration of time, but rather the extent of the reflection. A cold, calculated judgment and decision may be arrived at in a short period of time, but a mere unconsidered and rash impulse, even though it include an intent to kill, is not such deliberation and premeditation as will fix an unlawful killing as murder of the first degree. To constitute a deliberate and premeditated killing, the slayer must weigh and consider the question of killing and the reasons for and against such a choice, and, having in mind the consequences, he decides to and does kill.
Expert witness testimony. Firearms.
Detective Noble, would you please state for the record your full name, your rank, and your current job classification?
Certainly. My name is Frank Ernest Noble. I'm a detective first class with the Monroe County Sheriff's Department, and I currently function as the department's armorer.
And what does being an armorer entail, briefly?
Well, briefly, I place all small arms orders for the department, issue firearms to department personnel, oversee secure storage of unissued weapons, that sort of thing. I'm also in charge of maintenance of all the department's small arms.
Would you say then, Detective Noble, that you are an expert on the subject of small arms?
Well, I would say so, yes.
On another subject, Detective Noble, are you a hunter? That is, do you hunt game for recreational purposes?
I go duck hunting occasionally. I used to hunt deer, but not so much anymore.
Would you say, though, that you are at least reasonably familiar with various common kinds of hunting and the firearms used for each?
Yes, I think that's fair to say.
I'd like you to take a look at this, Detective. It's People's Exhibit A, a list of firearms and related items confiscated from the defendant's residence on March 17th of last year. I'd like you, if you would, Detective, to read this list out loud for the jurors to hear, and then I'd like to ask you a few questions about it, okay?
Certainly. Certainly. Let's see. Okay. Two Colt 45 caliber semi-automatic pistols, one box of hollow point 45 caliber ammunition, one Smith & Wesson 357 Magnum revolver, one box of partially consumed hollow point 357 Magnum ammunition, one double-barreled sawed-off shotgun, 12-gauge, one box of 12-gauge shotgun shells loaded with double-aught buckshot, three Colt AR-15 rifles with six banana clips and approximately 1,500 rounds of steel-jacketed ammunition, one Kalashnikov AK-47 rifle with two banana clips and approximately 250 rounds of steel-jacketed ammunition.
Have you personally inspected each of the items listed, Detective Noble?
Yes, ma'am, I have.
Good. Then, with respect to the three handguns, the two Colt 45s and the 357 Magnum, did your inspection reveal anything unusual about these weapons?
No, ma'am. All three appeared to be in good working order and unmodified.
I see. Detective Noble, given your experience as a hunter, would you say that these three handguns are firearms that would be suitable for hunting purposes?
Well, not for ducks or deer, if that's what you mean. I have heard of some folks using high-powered handguns for wild boar hunting. You see, boar are usually found in areas of real heavy brush, and you're maybe less likely to get tangled up in there with a handgun than with a rifle.
I see. Detective, when was the last time you heard of a wild boar being taken in the state of New Jersey?
Objection.
Withdrawn. Assuming, Detective Noble, that you were setting out to hunt wild boar in heavy underbrush, and assuming further that you set out to do so with a 357 Magnum, would you use hollow point ammunition?
No, ma'am.
No? And why is that, Detective?
Well, a hollow point slug, when it hits its target, it expands very rapidly, spreads out away from the hollowed out portion.
And that's not good for hunting?
Well, in the sense that it's very lethal, it is. A hollow point slug is designed to do maximum damage to a living target. But the problem, from a hunting point of view, is that that kind of damage involves a whole lot of internal bleeding, which ruins the meat around the wound. What a hunter wants is a good, clean kill.
So then, if hollow point ammunition is no good for hunting, and yet it's designed to inflict damage on living targets, I guess you'd have to say it's designed to kill people, wouldn't you, Detective?
Objection, Your Honor.
Withdrawn. Let's move on to the shotgun, Detective. Is that, in your opinion, suitable for hunting?
Well, if it hadn't had its barrels sawed off short, it would be a perfectly good fowling piece. As it is, though, it's useless for hunting. The range is too short. And then, of course, a sawed-off shotgun is illegal anyway.
Yes, let's get to that. Can you tell the court, Detective, what the legal definition of a sawed-off shotgun is in this state?
Yes. For legal purposes, a sawed-off shotgun is any shotgun or rifle with a barrel that's less than 16 inches long, or any shotgun or rifle where the whole weapon is less than 24 inches long.
And what is the length of the barrels of the shotgun listed in People's Exhibit A?
14 inches.
That weapon, then, meets the legal definition of a sawed-off shotgun?
Yes.
You've already testified, Detective, that the shotgun in question is useless for hunting because of its limited range. What possible advantage, then, would there be to modifying a weapon in this way?
Well, it's easy to conceal, and it's exceptionally lethal at close range.
Say, within the confines of a liquor store?
Your Honor, I object.
Withdrawn, Your Honor. Let's move on again, Detective, to the three AR-15 rifles. Perhaps you could tell us first, Detective, what the letters AR stand for in this context.
Yes, ma'am. AR stands for assault rifle.
I see. Most of us in the courtroom have probably heard of the M16 rifle used by the U.S. Army. Is the AR-15 at all related to the M16, Detective?
Yes, very much so. They're almost the same weapon, in fact. The M16 is the military version. It's standard issue to U.S. armed forces. The AR-15 is the civilian version of just about the same rifle.
And how do the AR-15 and the M16 differ?
Well, there are a number of small differences. The main difference, though, is that the AR-15 is designed for semi-automatic fire only. The M16 can be switched between semi-automatic fire and, in the earlier models, full automatic fire, or, in more recent models, three-shot burst mode.
Without going into a great deal of detail, Detective, can you explain to us the difference between semi-automatic and fully automatic firing?
Certainly. When you fire a semi-automatic weapon, you have to pull the trigger one time for each shot you fire. You don't have to reload after each shot or manually work the bolt, but you do have to use multiple trigger pulls for multiple shots. When you fire a fully automatic weapon, you can just hold down the trigger and hose down a whole area until you run out of ammunition.
Is the possession by civilians of fully automatic weapons legal in this state?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Now then, Detective, before we get into the specifics of the three AR-15s listed in People's Exhibit A, would you say that AR-15s in general are good hunting weapons?
Not good hunting weapons, no. They can certainly be used for hunting, but they're not particularly accurate at long range. And I think most hunters, most sportsmen, would feel a little embarrassed to think they needed that kind of firepower to bring down a mule deer. I sure would.
Okay. Now, as to the three specific AR-15s in question, you've personally inspected those weapons, right?
That's right.
Did you find anything unusual about any of them?
Yes, ma'am. Two are just ordinary assembly line AR-15s. But the third one has been deliberately modified.
In what way?
The sear pin has been filed down.
And what is the result of that modification?
The weapon is fully automatic. You squeeze the trigger and it keeps firing until you let up or the clip's empty.
I see. You've already testified, Detective, that such a weapon is illegal. Leaving aside issues of legality for the moment, would such a weapon be useful for, say, deer hunting?
No, ma'am. Not unless you wanted to cut the poor damn deer in half, it wouldn't be.
I see. Okay, I'd like to call your attention now, Detective, to the six banana clips listed with the three AR-15s. Can you tell us first what a banana clip is, and then tell us whether you found these particular banana clips unusual in any way?
Well, first of all, the term clip refers to an ammunition magazine that can be removed from the weapon. The clip holds all the weapon's ammunition, except the round currently chambered, if there is a round chambered. The capacity of clips, even clips designed for the same weapon, can vary quite a bit. You can put a 10-round clip in an AR-15. You can put a 50-round clip in it. Larger capacity clips are often curved to make them less cumbersome. That's where the term banana clip comes from. It's a large capacity curved clip.
Okay. And the specific banana clips confiscated with these weapons?
They were taped together in pairs. That is, the six clips were found in three pairs. Each pair consisted of two clips taped together such that the curves of the clips were aligned and most of the two clip bodies overlapped, but the tops of the two clips extended from opposite ends of the pair.
And what significance, if any, do you attach to this, Detective? That is, why, in your opinion, would anyone tape clips together in this way?
Well, it doubles your immediately available supply of ammunition. You load both clips to capacity, then you insert one of the clips into the weapon. You can fire until that clip is empty. Then you pull out the taped together pair, flip it over, and insert the other clip into the weapon. You're fully reloaded in a matter of a couple of seconds.
And again, do you see any sporting application for clips taped together in this way?
No, ma'am, I don't.
Okay, Detective, let's move finally to the AK-47 rifle listed in People's Exhibit A. Can you first tell us, just in a general way, what kind of weapon that is?
Well, like the AR-15, the AK is an assault rifle. The fully automatic military version is the standard infantry weapon in the Soviet Union, China, what used to be the Eastern Bloc, and in many third world countries. They're manufactured in a number of countries. Those that are, or were, legally imported to the United States are semi-automatic, not automatic. Most of the ones we see here, like the one on the list here, are made in the PRC.
The People's Republic of China?
Yes, ma'am.
But you say that the AK-47 listed in People's Exhibit A is not a fully automatic weapon?
It wasn't when it was imported, but it is now. Just like with the AR-15, it's pretty easy to modify a semi-automatic AK-47 into a fully automatic one. And that's just what somebody did to this one.
Thank you, Detective. That'll be all.